another episode of the Pop Culture Roundtable, the podcast that's ready for adventure, so we're taking it to the jungle. In this episode, we talk about Disney's Jungle Cruise board game, Inktober 2020, Felix and the Monsters, and home office must-haves. I'm Andrew Sale.
I'm Lauren Rubin.
I'm Patrick Hill.
So put on your life vest, pop some Dramamine, and get ready for the best dad jokes this side of the Nile, because we're about to embark on another episode.
Check out the back of that waterfall.
We like to kick every episode off by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy about our weeks. Patrick, what's new with your neck of the week?
Stressful times. I feel like I'm in this weird between season. You know, I've spent the last 6 weeks have been really big on trying to lock in these projects, lock in contracts, working on buying a house. There's a lot of things were started. And now I have a bag of promises, but then nothing's actually happening. But it's about to all be happening. And I'm kind of sitting in this weird dead zone.
Would you call it a betweezin'?
No.
Oh.
And it's
it's just a between season, Lauren.
I got it. I thought it was funny.
We as people are conditioned to be active all the time, especially as it pertains to work. And I was actually talking to someone the other day. It's hard to know, you know, do we work out of compulsion? Like, do you work out of a desire to be active? Or are we actually conditioned to work out of because it's tied directly to our self-worth? You know, do we feel like if we don't work, we're failures and we're not doing anything with our lives and no good? Or is it that we want to work because we want to be healthy and contribute and all that kind of stuff? And I think the reality is my work is just very tightly tied to my ego and self-worth, and that's not right. You know, I should find self-worth I should find self-worth in my relationships, and I should find self-worth in the time that I volunteer to people, or I should find value in having alone time or in exercising or in, there's all these other places that I should be able to find enjoyment and I should be able to find fulfillment. But if I'm not working, I don't have it. And when I am doing other things, it tends to be more to distract myself from the anxiety I feel for not working, as opposed to doing those things because I believe those things make me holistically happy and healthy. And I don't know if this is like a uniquely American thing, or like if there's, or let me say it a different way. I don't know how cultural this is, because I know so many people like that. And I do know some people in other parts of the world. I've got some relationships with other people who do not feel that way. But again, I don't know if it's cultural. I don't know if it's my family. I don't know if it's what's caused it. I really want to break it. But gosh, it is tough right now.
I think it's especially hard when you're freelancing, where the work you're doing directly results in how much money you make, and there's no steady income. There's no in between. So I think that completely messes with you sometimes. Because it's if I'm not doing something, I'm literally not making any money right now. And I have, and you just bought a house, like you said, you have rent, all these other things that you need to worry about. So that gets to me all the time. I even posted something on Instagram this weekend that was making fun of this, but it's okay, it's the weekend, so I need to relax and stop thinking about work. But if I don't work, then I'm not going to get anything done. And I'm just sitting here worrying about all the things that I need to get done. And that was my entire day Saturday. And it's hard.
But there's something to be said for the constant acceleration. So when I think back to, you know, one of my early jobs out of college, and I was making $38,000 a year, whatever it was, and I had a place to live. I had food on the table. I bought a car that's when I bought my GTI. So it's not too shabby of a car. I did the things I wanted to do. I still went to the movies all the time. I still went out to eat pretty frequently. I drove up to Canton 5 days a week. Andrew knows this. That's the reason I'm being specific. But the point is, I made you know, a third of what I make now or whatever it is. It's not quite that good, but I'm saying like it's a fraction, and yet I don't feel any more dependent or independence. I don't feel any more relief. I don't feel any differently now than I felt then. And I would imagine most of the people listening to this would say they're in the same boat. Yeah. That, you know, you can look back, oh, this mm-hmm. is what it was 5 years ago, this is what it was 10 years ago, this is what it was 20 years ago, and I still feel like every week I'm feeling the same stuff, even though if I take a step back objectively, my situation is so much better. So I was thinking about it in terms, this is a weird thing, I was thinking about it in terms of alcohol abuse. And you'll hear stories of people that say, oh, I was drinking and I was drinking because I thought that was giving me relief. And then I stopped drinking for, you know, 60 days or 100 days or whatever. And I realized, oh, I actually feel really happy when I'm not drinking. And all the drinking was masking what I was feeling. So I thought I knew what my emotions were. But it turns out my emotions were different. And I just had this buffer between them. And so that has made me question, because we value money, because we value output, because does that create this buffer to our actual emotions? Is it possible we would pursue money less and be more content with less if we de-elevated the importance of work, work, work 24/7? I don't know. It's so I'm just, that's what I'm struggling with right now is kind of mm-hmm. separating all those things out because it's, and also it hasn't helped being home with all the COVID stuff because I can't go sit yes. in a movie and forget about it for 2.5 hours. I can't just go, you know, I can't go to a restaurant 5 nights a week and not think about it or whatever. So, man, weird times. Absolutely weird times. And so yeah. on that note, haven't been watching movies, haven't been going to restaurants, haven't been doing anything, just been sitting at home and actually working on a product. I think I teased it. I don't know if I teased it last week on this show or not. I might have.
I think you mentioned it.
I'm going to be releasing my first product at the end of this month. You know, you made the comment a second ago that if you stop working, you stop getting paid. You know, that whole one-for-one transaction, mm-hmm. Which is the reason you hear so much about, oh, passive income or semi-passive income. And so releasing mm-hmm. a product is hopefully a way to generate that. And obviously, Lauren, you do that with actual tangible goods that you produce, because once you've printed them, at that point, you're not applying any more work other than fulfillment. And so I know that mm-hmm. you are building that up. But this will be my first digital product that I've created. This will be my first really opportunity I've made for myself to hopefully generate passive income. And I, money aside, because again, we're not talking about, we got to get away from that. I'm really excited just to talk about the process of building a product. Like, I so want to sit down and just say, this is the idea and this is how I came across it and this is how I decided to approach it and these are the whys. And but I can't do that today. Because I need to get this launched first. So I want to get this launched, and then as soon as I get this launched, then I want to come back on the podcast and actually talk about what it took to launch a product, because it's exciting for me, and I want to hopefully help some other people that have ideas sitting in their heads that haven't, you know, got them on paper, as it were. So anyway,
sorry,
that's my week. I think Lauren, her cat meowed and then she put a sweater over it. I think she just covered it up with a sweater.
Oh, be quiet, Binks, and just throws
it's like
sweater
a bird.
Over.
Like you put it, if you count the lights, it's just nap time.
Yeah, her cat thinks it's sleeping now.
I have a blanket and I kind of swished it at him to get him to shut up because he's being really loud.
Interesting. Okay. All right, Lauren. Hopefully your week has been less introspective than mine.
I'm kind of in a lot of the same boat where like I am feeling really like fatigued by a lot of the like COVID of it all and being stuck in the house a lot. And like, I'm just not really enjoying watching movies and stuff. I've been reading a lot and I know nobody wants to hear me talk about this anymore, so I'll be super quick, but I did finish reading all the Magician's books. I know, shut up.
I wouldn't but have I did, done that really had you not them. Said nobody wants to hear about this.
Well, you guys made fun of me before we even started. So
trap.
Like, I know.
You kind of set the trap, but we don't make fun of you.
it's us displaying how well we know you at this point.
No, I mean, like, you're teasing me. I'm not like, mm-hmm. I'm not like upset about it, mm-hmm. but like you guys just give me, you know, crap about it. But anyway,
yes.
they're really
good. I
did
get these shirts made that says Lauren sucks. But again, we're not making fun of you.
And we're not even sure we know which Lauren. I know there's a photo of you on the back of the shirt, but that could be any. That could be for any reason.
So don't have such thin skin, Lauren.
Yeah,
thin
yeah.
Thin skin, Lauren. That's what we're gonna start calling you.
Oh, please don't. It sounds terrible.
All right, so you finished The Magicians, and how was it? Was it better than the series?
I honestly am having a really hard time like saying if I liked one better than the other. They feel really unique compared to one another. It's one of the most interesting adaptations I think I've ever kind of come across, because it's both, like, it does include almost everything from the books, but in kind of a remixed version. And it's kind of like, I think because they turned 3 young adult novels into 50 plus hours of TV, so they needed to expand on it quite a bit to fill all that time. And I think they made really good choices with what they did with all of that. So I think that they're both really amazing. And like, I have this really bad habit of when I enjoy reading a book, when I get to the end, I will like stop reading it basically, sometimes for like months, because I want to like save the ending. Like,
oh, I thought you meant like when you finish the book, you stop reading. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty typical.
That's normal. Yeah.
No. I'll get like really close to the end. I tend to get really close to the end, and then I'll like save it because like I just like don't want to finish it. I want to like keep it for longer. It's like waiting to eat your dessert or something. So I actually read the whole second half of the last book in one day though, because I was like so into it. So I did think they were really good books. And I just want to put it out there that I am looking for some new books also, because I just finished this and I'm picked up some books from like my own library that I want to reread, like Dune, for obvious reasons, I think. But I just kind of would like to read some new like fantasy novels. I'm just really into that kind of like fun adventure sort of thing, especially talking about Harry Potter so much. So if anybody has any recommendations, I would totally be down for some new stuff.
Especially if the genre is sexy magicians.
If you have not read
David Copperfield.
Copperfield. David Copperfield.
Sounds like you're like an old timey like radio. David Copperfield.
I have so many ideas in my head for David Copperfield. That is incredible. All right. Lauren, have you read the Spiderwick Chronicles?
I've read like pieces of them, not all of them. I read them when I was really young, though. I would actually like borrow them from kids I babysat when they went to bed. So that was how I read them.
They're a young reader's book. They're
kind of like Lemony Snicket middle level.
Yeah, they're like for like middle school age, you know, high school, whatever. But they are very fun reads, and they're definitely in that fantasy genre. Like, there's fairies and like trolls and things like that people see, and like this whole other world that you can only view with these special like monocle spyglass thing. And when you have it on, there's like this this journal essentially that Arthur Spiderwick keeps, that he chronicles all of these different findings. It's a lot like Gravity Falls, like the journals that Dipper uses to learn about like all the mysterious things of Gravity Falls. It's like that, but it's a little bit higher level than Gravity Falls, but it's really fun. Like, the series itself is really, really fun. So I have the whole thing. Yeah. If you want to just borrow it sometime, because I think there's like 5 or 6 books in the series. And they're quick reads, but the illustrations in there are incredible too, because there's like chapter illustrations and things like that. It's really great. So
that's actually what I remember of those books more than anything, is those illustrations.
They're great. I watched the movie. The movie wasn't as great.
I think I read like the first 2 books, but like ages ago, like when I would babysit. So it's clearly like a long time ago. And then I watched one new movie, which is new on Netflix, and I was hearing a ton of buzz about it. I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Have you guys watched this?
I have not watched it yet.
Seen the trailer, haven't seen the film.
Okay, I'm not going to say very much about it, which is why I brought it up now versus like my main topic. It's a new Charlie Kaufman movie, which I think if you've seen a lot of his movies, I think they kind of elicit a reaction of like, you either love it or you hate it. And I really like some of his movies, and I really don't like some of his movies.
It's a Charlie Kaufman movie?
Yes.
I thought Charlie Kaufman had died.
No.
Like, Charlie Kaufman, like the actor and the...
The writer.
Okay.
I think it might be a different person.
Okay.
I know who you're thinking of, Andrew.
Andy Kaufman.
I'm thinking of Andy Kaufman.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure he died. I am sure he is not alive anymore.
Well, I was also maybe they made the movie posthumously. Like, I honestly don't know that much about Charlie Kaufman.
No, but Andy Kaufman is who I was thinking of.
And the movie Man on the Moon was about Andy Kaufman, correct?
Yes.
I believe so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm thinking of ending things. I did not like this movie, but
not your cup of tea,
it really wasn't. I honestly kind of hated it, but I would really like to talk to somebody who liked it, because I've heard a lot of people talking about that they liked it, but I it wasn't for me. It really
wasn't.
You
want to know why?
Just,
you want them to show their work.
I do think that the reason I didn't like it as much as I did is because the subject matter is something that just kind of is annoying to me. And so, like, this wasn't a movie that was meant for me.
Are you able to tell us what the subject matter is?
No, not without being spoilers. Because the trailer is so vague, and I think it's a really, really good trailer. But, and it's not a bad movie. I'm bringing this up now because, like, it really made, like, I kept thinking about it and I want to talk about it, but I didn't like it.
Yeah,
it's very thought-provoking.
You'd like a counterpoint.
I still think this was a thought-provoking movie. I want to talk about it with somebody who liked it because, like, I think I'm biased about why I didn't like it. So I just think that it's, like, open for discussion that
you
is
know,
bigger.
So
well, let me watch it. Inevitably, I will love it since you don't like it. And then we will discuss. That's how that'll work.
Well, let me throw this out there, too. In our community, there's a guy that goes by Spin Luke, or he might go by Film Dispenser, but Spencer Howard, he actually runs the site Supermassive Pop. Obviously, we've done episodes with him before. He's been on the show before, but I can guarantee you he's seen the movie and will have feedback, or at least be able to to kind of play the other side of the coin. But anybody that really wants to talk movies in depth, obviously I enjoy talking, but I think Mr. Supermassive Pop, a.k.a. Spin Luke, a.k.a. Spencer Howard,
a.k.a.
has
your brother-in-law.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to legitimize him and not delegitimize him. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, so, well, I wanted to give the counterpoint to your point.
Yeah.
I'm illustrating what you're talking about now in real time.
He always has a good take. Good take, yeah.
Yeah, and I've met him. He was on the Star Wars episode that we all did together. So
and he rocks.
Yeah, he's actually, I should have thought of him. Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's perfect. Yeah, he's always got a good take. So if you want to have an actual, what's the term, educated movie discussion, then you probably don't want to talk to me. You want to talk to him. But jump in Slack, gameof1.network, click on the Slack icon, join the community, and just ping him. Or start a conversation inside our movie discussion channel, #movie_discussion.
Yeah, hit me up if you have thoughts about this, because it's thought-provoking for sure, like I said. It's hard to even articulate without giving stuff away, so I need to stop talking about it.
Okay. And don't forget to buy Master of One merch, gameof1.network.
Like totally radio announcer today. And then lastly, while I was working on a big project yesterday, I binged an entire season of Real Housewives of Potomac, which I have like not watched up until this point. I watched nearly all of the Real Housewives franchises, but had ignored this one for a while. And it is so good. So I just had to mention that.
Isn't it like upper class trashy?
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, I like it to like make fun of. I don't like watch Housewives because I like idolize these people in any way. I think they're all ridiculous. But the latest season, like one of these women has like a gray parrot named T'Challa that like is a huge character in the season. And it's amazing.
I think I've said this before. You know, my wife watches Real Housewives, but she only watches Beverly Hills. And of course, these are like the, you know, the richest of the richest.
Mm-hmm.
And after one of the episodes, they showed a preview for the latest season of
Potomac.
Yeah, Potomac. And it just looked like the Georgia. It looked like comparing, well, honestly, maybe San Antonio, Texas to Austin, Texas. It was like, or Dallas, I should say. It was like a really big difference, you know. And it struck me as the trailer trash of the upper class white woman world.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Hot take.
I'm gonna
Patrick's
have to watch more of it to kind of figure out where they fit in. But I think like Potomac is outside of DC, and so like the girl that I like the most from this current season is a political commentator, like on CNN a lot, and she's really awesome. So there's like a very like interesting history with the women in that group, I would say. And if you're going to watch any of them, I would say New York is the best. I've been trying to convince Mackenzie to start watching New York, but their season is just ending.
I just know that the Beverly Hills episode went off, and it was some like crazy, like fashion show, art gala. Everybody's in gowns and crazy jewelry and whatever. And then the preview it showed was a woman holding two babies with a do-rag yelling for someone across the room. Oh, and it just looked really different.
That's because you're seeing the reunion of Beverly Hills where they're all just like sitting in a ballroom in fancy ball gowns. And then for Potomac, it's like the actual episode. And like some of the women have like three children. So you're just seeing them like, you know, in their everyday lives.
Patrick thinks that having any more than one child is trashy. That's what you're trying to get. If you've got more than one child, you have one? Are trash.
Yeah. I sell mine.
Yeah, you sell your kids.
I'm trying to buy a house. As we have kids, I just sell them.
But yeah, they're not trash. I wouldn't say that they're trashy.
Well, that's good. The best thing about selling kids, especially if you already have a house, is you can own a smaller house. You can get more house for your money because you don't have to have as many bedrooms for the kids.
Where am I going to podcast?
Yeah. Wait, is that a real question? Because I can give you some suggestions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that's your week?
That's my week.
Okay, turn things around here for a second. It's been a really, really, really rough week for me. Like,
oh no,
really rough.
I'm sorry.
In a lot of ways, it's been super stressful at work. Been like, very, very busy. Very, just a lot to do this week. On top of that, some really personal things going on that have just been really difficult. So, took the day off today on release day, and perfect timing. I got a book in the mail from our friend Josh Holtzclaw. Do you remember Josh Holtzclaw?
Of course.
Lauren, he is our friend that works at Pixar. He worked on The Incredibles. He's worked on Cars 2. He also used to work at Light.
Big Friend.
What?
Big Friend.
Yeah. But he used to work at Leica, and he worked on like the Box Trolls, and he worked on Kubo and all these different things, right? So he's a nice designer. But like he employs his design in these other worlds. So like he was responsible for creating box art that's inside of the Incredibles, like products and things that are placed in there. So, but he and his wife, Monica, just released their own book a few days ago called Felix and the Monsters. I'm going to show you the cover to the book. Here's the cover. Can you guys see it?
Oh, cute.
Yeah. It's very, very cute. It is 100%. What?
Which one is Felix on the front?
I haven't read it yet, so I just got it. But I think Felix is this guy down here.
Okay.
I think he's the guy with the keytar down at the bottom. So let me read you the quick description of the book. Felix is supposed to guard the wall. Everyone knows that horrible monsters live on the other side. But it's a pretty boring job, so he spends most of his time daydreaming about playing in a band. Then, one fateful day, he hears music coming from the top of the wall, and that changes everything. Get ready for an epic jam session. 1, 2, 3, 4. So, that's the premise. It says, with bold, joyful art, this timely, humorous story celebrates the joy of opening yourself up to the unfamiliar and music's power to bring us together. The art in this book is incredible. Even if I wasn't trying to support an incredible artist and a friend, I would still have bought this book. If I saw it sitting on the shelf at Target or something like that, I would still have bought this book because of the art. It's very, very cool. It has kind of this retro textury, simplified shapes, but done like kind of sketchy and real textury vibe. It's very much Josh's style, if you're familiar with his style. But it's he and his wife. I'm guessing he did the illustrations and she wrote it. Or maybe they tag teamed on the writing process as well. But it's very, very good. It's not even just like a couple pages. It's a full length, you know, like kids book. And it's just really neat. I'm really looking forward to reading it. It looks beautiful, and you're supporting an incredible artist who is just a really nice guy. He's a super cool guy. So, Felix and the Monsters, check that out. Another thing that I got in the mail today.
Can I point out real quick, he doesn't go by Big Friend Co. anymore. That's how I remember Josh. It's just Josh _ Holtzclaw.
Yes.
Big Friend Co. is dead.
Yeah.
Aw.
I asked him where to get the book because I went to try to find it on his site. he says just to go to the it's published by Penguin. Actually a subsidiary of Penguin, like one of their printings, Nancy Paulson Books. There's a link to it in show notes. Just go there and there's a list of all the different places you can buy it to support him. But the book is great. It's really, really nice quality and it's really great looking. The other thing that I got in the mail today, or the other day is this, this guy right here. I teased it on Slack a little bit, but it is the Amazon exclusive 50th anniversary of the Walt Disney Archives. So it's if you're familiar with the Walt Disney Archives logo, it's five different versions of Mickey, going from the original black and white all the way to the modern day Mickey. That's the logo that they have for the Walt Disney Archives. Well, this is what they have done is they have made five individual Funko Pop figures of the each of those five Mickeys that you can buy separately. This is the Amazon exclusive where they're all put together on one thing and it says underneath it, Walt Disney Archives, like their logo. So it's essentially a figure representation of their logo. And it's Mickey kind of drawing, if you can see, he's drawing, each one is drawing the next one. Like each one has a pencil or a pen or whatever, drawing the next one. It's very, very cool. It's beautiful. The box, like typically these boxes feel kind of crappy or you know, like really cheap. This one feels really hardy. Like the cardboard is really sturdy. It's got this gold foiling on it. Can you see that?
Absolutely. Logo, yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice box. Like typically speaking, like you don't see the box, like Funko boxes look like this. So this one's really, really nice. I looked, my friend picked it up for me, pre-ordered it a while ago. It just came in. I think it was $50. I looked for it today. You're not going to be able to pick one up for less than 100. Like they're on eBay now for $100. They've sold out on Amazon. But I posted a link to it in show notes if you want to check it out. It's really, really cool. I'm excited about that. The final thing that I got this week, and I don't have it in hand yet, but they are available. So I want to talk about them now while they are still available. Mondo dropped some Disney stuff this week. And specifically, they dropped these pin sets from Dave Quiggle. I've talked about Dave Quiggle multiple times on this show, and there's a link to this in the show notes. But they dropped some Mickey and Friends enamel pins. So there's a Mickey and Minnie set that is connected with this little chain.
Yep.
And they're like this sepia toned, like original Mickey and Minnie. And it's just their heads. All of these are just heads. And then there's a Daisy Duck, a Donald Duck, a Goofy, and a Pluto. And I picked up a couple of these, and they're super fun. They're totally Dave Quiggle. The second I saw it, I didn't even have to see the artist name. I knew that it was Dave Quiggle. But they're very fun. They
Which
have
one
kind
did
of
you
this...
leave out? Like, how would you choose to leave someone out? They're all so cute.
So I left out Pluto and Daisy. I got the pair. I got Mickey and Minnie, and then I got Donald, and I got Goofy. Mostly I left out Daisy because I don't like, it's Daisy. I'm just not, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan of how Pluto looks. He looks a little, he looks kind of manic. He kind of looks like a psycho. just how his eyes are
really
put together.
Dead eyes.
Is like dead, okay, but totally awake. Like he's undead. They're undead eyes. but Donald, I fell in love with that Donald illustration. That Donald illustration is just amazing.
Goofy
so,
does look like he died and was reanimated.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
but I love
it's
I
interesting
love Goofy
that they
though,
chose so. To do the eyes like solid black and not even do like a little dot
eyes.
Of white or something, you know?
But that's Dave Quiggle. That's what I'm saying. Like all of Dave
Quiggle's. Yeah. I shouldn't.
All of Dave Quiggle's illustrations of Disney characters, even the ones that he produces for Wonderground Gallery, they're solid. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do any pie eyes or anything. Yeah,
the color.
Take it back. Take it back.
No, you don't have to take it back. I agree. Like you either like this style or you prefer a different one. But this is Dave Quiggle.
I'm just
Quiggle,
not sure
so
it
like,
translates great in all of these because it does. Some of them have that kind of dead-eyed expression you're describing a little
yep.
bit.
Yep. 100%.
Well, they call him Dead-Eyed Dave Quiggle.
Deadeye Quiggle. Old Deadeye Dave. So anyway, they're up on their website now. The Mickey and Minnie are pre-ordered, but the other ones are available now. So go hit those up. There is a new Disney game that Mondo Games has put out. There's some mixed feelings on the initial kind of pre-release reviews of it. I did order that as well. So when that comes in, I will give a review of that, but we'll hold off on that for now. But all of that stuff, there is a new wave of Disney items on Mondo's site, including other other glaze versions of this Mickey, the Mickey
Tiki.
I think
Mondo's going to have trouble with that game. I mean, I've read some of the reviews too. You'll get in and we'll see it in person. We are familiar with Villainous. We bought Villainous when it came out. This is one of the other, Disney.
Can you pause on that for a second? Because I'm going to talk about a Disney game during my category, and I want to talk about quality of things, and this is a perfect topic for us to talk about with that.
Great. Pause.
So let's do that. So we'll pause that, and we'll revisit it when I get to my category. All right. That's it. Are we good with the around the table? All right.
Let's go.
Well, let's rock and roll into some categories. Every week we talk about things in the pop culture world that are fun, and that's what we do. Things that are either new to the world or new to us, and that's what this whole category thing is all about. Since I did pause you, Patrick, why don't we just pick it up where I left off? What I'm talking about this week is a game, and it's a game that's put out by Disney. They've been putting out a lot more games recently. But this is a game in conjunction with Ravensburg, I think is the name of the game company. I could tell you.
Ravensburger, the puzzle company?
Ravensburger, yeah. Yeah, okay. It's a puzzle and game company. They've done several things. But it's the Disney Parks Jungle Cruise adventure game. And it is a board game, but this one is special. You can get them when you can find them. You can get them on Amazon, or you can maybe even buy them at like Target or something like that, at various retailers. But they do sell out really quickly. Like, I haven't ever been able to find one in person. And they even sell out on Amazon pretty regularly. So, but this is a special version. This is a Disney Parks exclusive. And so I'm going to show you. This is what the cover looks like. Yeah. It's cool. The illustrations are beautiful. They're really, really great. But the box art is different. It's a totally different box. Doesn't have the Ravensburger logo down at the bottom. It's like a fully different experience. It looks like it's in like a cargo crate is how this one looks. The regular game that we have a link to in the show notes it just looks like a jungle scene. This looks like it's a crate that has some jungle stuff on it. But the byline of the game is a voyage of mystery and misfortune. The word miss is carved out, and it just says fortune. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the point of the game. What sets this game apart from the regular version is it gives you some new like objective cards or some adventure cards that you pull, and then some of the components are like upgraded components. If you were to play the game just regular, then the Jungle Cruise boats that you go around, like the player tokens that you go around, are just solid colors. Like one is just solid plastic green, mm-hmm. one is solid plastic red, solid plastic yellow, whatever. These are hand painted little.
Oh, dang.
Those look nice.
Yes, they're very nice. So they look
like little miniature versions of the boats, like for real. They're really cool.
Yes, then they look, that's exactly right. They look exactly like the boat. So it's a 2-4 player game. You play as the skipper of one of these different jungle cruises, and you're trying to pick up passengers and cargo and drop things off all along the way, and trying to avoid various happenstances that go along the way, whether sure. it's like
the river
natural.
Can be dangerous.
What?
Yeah.
The river can be dangerous.
The river can be mm-hmm. dangerous. And so you encounter these different things along the way. And so let me just show you a couple of things with this. You are going in your boat. Every person has a different named boat. And if you're familiar with the Jungle Cruise, like the actual ride, every boat has a name as well. And so people sometimes will actually like wait in line and request certain boats. And so they'll wait to get on certain boats because of certain things. Patrick, oh. I bet you didn't know this, but Congo Connie is the boat that you and I rode on. You know how I know that?
How do you
because
know that?
Because look, that's where the pat is carved in. Each of these boats, can you see that?
Yeah.
Each of these boats is a direct pull from the actual ones from the parks.
That's so detailed.
It's
crazy.
Really neat. Like it even has exactly where we sat at the front right of the boat is where the word Pat is carved into the front of the boat with a heart. It's right there. So We wrote on the Congo Connie. But so there's Congo Connie, Kissimmee Kate, Amazon Annie, and Nile Princess. Those are the four boats that you can skipper. And then you go around. These are the different, I'll just kind of show you like real, these are the different passengers. Passengers are assigned to different families. So this one would be part of the Lions family, L-Y-O-N-S. And the other one is the Cruz family. C-R-O-C-R-U-Z.
How coincidental.
I write, like, I don't know if they did that on purpose, but it definitely worked out.
It fit in, though.
I love how the, like, game itself is punny, just like the ride. Like,
yeah, so that is exactly right. You read through the rule books, mm-hmm. And there are puns spread all throughout this thing. In fact, as you navigate the river, you will encounter these different encounter cards or these navigation cards. And so these navigation cards, one of the things you have to do as you draw these, you have to read the joke at the bottom of the card. Like that's part of the actual gameplay. So this one is the backside of water. There you go, Patrick.
Thank you.
Coming from this side, us skippers call it O2H, but that's a chemical joke, which doesn't always get a reaction. So you have to read these dad jokes. But this one is, this one has a...
I just got it. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. There's just a delay. That's what it is. Each card has a set, danger. So from 0 to 3, this one has a danger of 1. And then down at the bottom, it tells you where you inflict damage. On this case, it's the left side of the boat or the starboard side of the boat. Or I'm sorry, the port side of the boat. And so if you do encounter damage, any cargo or passengers that are on that side of the boat end up getting ejected from the boat and lost in lost in the jungle. And there's all
passengers
sorts of
not get murdered in this game.
No, there's no. Yeah, there are headhunters though.
Not
there explicit. There's a headhunter.
Not
card.
Explicitly.
I'm surprised I thought they were pulling the headhunters out.
They didn't. I don't think anyway. I'm pretty sure that they're in here if I remember correctly. But then there's the premise of the game is you're trying to get them all the way around and there's different kind of tracks you can go to get around the river. And actually, let me show you the board because the board is beautiful. Here's the board. Can you see the illustration?
Nice. Yeah, that looks nice.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
really nice.
It's cool.
But there are different paths to get there. There's kind of a more direct route and then a less direct route, but gets you more like prizes and things to go along the way. You're trying to get
so
to
the
headquarters.
Boat acts as a player mat, and then you have a boat token that's actually on the board.
Correct. Yep. This is your player mat, and that's the boat token. On the bottom of the boats, by the way, on the bottom of your player mat, it says, if you can read this, flip me over. it's very, very playful. But as you go, kind of the premise of the game is you're trying to get the most money at the end. And the way that you get the most money is by having the right kinds of cargo, pairing up with things, getting sets of cargo, having the right kind of passengers on. As you go around, there is a set family that is essentially a bonus family. Like if you have characters that are part of this family at the end, they're worth 5 points for every character as opposed to only 3 points. And so you can figure that out as you go by picking up these clue cards that look like these little... They look like little like postage deals. They're really, really cool. The pieces are very, very well done. But you determine...
Very detailed game.
Yes. You determine by process of elimination which players you should have... Like, which passengers you should have in your boat so that you can get the most money at the end of the game, essentially. And at the end, you get tips, and you get tips based on how many like great things that you bring. So like the passengers will tip you when you get to headquarters. Mm-hmm. So all that said, there's a lot to kind of consider, but the gameplay itself seems very, very simple. It seems very straightforward. You roll a dice. The dice are all custom too. Like look at these dice. I think you get these dice with the regular game. I'm not sure.
Oh, cool.
But even if you do, even if you don't, these dice are beautiful. Like how they're all like custom, like distressed. And they look, everything just looks really, really well done. So on the point of quality. Patrick, the actual game board, fantastic, super thick. It has this texture to it, this wooden texture. I don't know if you can see, but it actually looks and feels like it's made of wood, which is really cool because it's cardboard. The dice, like I said, are incredible. All of the tokens in this game are very thick chipboard, like it's like very, very thick chipboard, like nice. Yep. And the printing is incredible. Mm-hmm. The illustrations and the art on the game are incredible. The details are incredible. Let me tell you some things that are less incredible. The boats, the player mats, pretty thin and flimsy. If these were made out of the same chipboard as the tokens, I would have zero complaint. This is a bit of a complaint.
Hmm. Kind of weird that they aren't, but yeah.
Right, exactly. That was kind of my thought. And the cards, and this is where I think we're going to have a lot of the same stuff, Patrick. The cards, also very flimsy and cheap. These feel like the venomous or the villainous cards. So whoever it is that
they're... I just don't understand it when you take an object, the object that will arguably get handled the most,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't that be the higher quality object?
I don't know. And that's argue, what's like crazy to me.
You could argue not do the thicker tokens. You could argue it would make more sense for those to be thinner to go with an actual like double ply card.
Do a like a third the size of this and apply this third to here. Like split the difference and I think you'd be great. These are incredible. Like seriously, these are probably some of the better punch out token like cardboard chipboard
tokens.
Thickness
wise, they look like what you would expect even in something like a Gloomhaven or a Brass or like one of these more premium like that looks.
And
like
I think
the
they're
same.
Actually thicker than the Gloomhaven punch outs. Honestly,
great.
Like you'll see them, like you'll see them in person. But the cards are very cheap feeling and flimsy. The art on the cards isn't, but the actual quality of the cards and so going back to what you were saying before, I haven't played this game yet. I think the gameplay is gonna be fun. If you're a regular game player, like if you play lots of games, you will pick up on the mechanics of this game rather quickly. And so I'm excited for you to play, Patrick, because I think there's some fun elements of strategy and there's some fun elements of trying to figure out, like there's some mystery because you have to try to strategize and figure out figure out what family is like the bonus family or whatever. So there is some kind of different mechanics at play. But going back to what you were saying before, Patrick, I think that some of like I don't know what the regular game is, because again this is the Disney Parks exclusive, so there are deluxe pieces, like there are enhanced things.
So there are going to be items that aren't as nice in the regular game.
Yeah, in fact,
you just don't know what those are.
Right. I know that the boats, like I said, is one of them. The boats aren't as nice in the regular version. And other than that, I'm not sure what's different. But
you know,
I know
it's possible you go with the thicker tokens because they're easier to pick up. Like they're easier to grab if you're moving them. But choosing to save money on the playing cards, that always blows my mind because that is so used. And now I don't know, I'm assuming you have to shuffle cards at some point. So especially if you're talking about something that's going to shuffle, you're going to be applying like a bending force to it.
Yeah.
It just won't hold up. You know, I guess I'm a bit confused. You know, I don't believe Disney's trying to make a great game. I think the people working on it want to do great work. Clearly the art is super good. But at the end of the day, they're not sitting there going, how can we concept a game that's going to win Game of the Year? Because ultimately that's going to be too much time spent for them, right? So they're looking for the, how can we do 20% of the effort and get 80% of the way there and get something out in front of people? They're trying to find that kind of maximum input to output range. It's the reason they take a game like Quartz and just buy it and release it instead of having to develop a game. You know, if they can just buy an already existing game and put their name on it.
Yeah.
That's maximizing the
power of acquisition, right? Of having money. And this game, I believe, was actually developed for them. It was developed by the what is it called? Ravensburger. The Ravenclaw team. The Ravensburger team. Because if you look at the back that has the credits, it says, as to Disney properties... This is copyright Disney, but the instructions of the game, the game design, the instructions of the game are Ravensburger. The game design is Prospero Hall. So they're actually attributing the game designer who developed the game.
Yeah.
So I do believe that they had this game developed and not their team. So if it was just left to the Disney team, then I would agree with you. But I do think that maybe they are trying to create games that are unique or have different kinds of gameplay and have different levels of complexity or different entry points for it. And I think that's why we're seeing different games like this.
It's a bit of scattershot, because what you do is you just say, oh, let's find six companies that are known for games and we'll throw X amount of dollars at them and they'll produce a game for us. You know, again, at the end of the day, I don't think the Disney executive cares. I think that the person making, again, the people contributing components, contributing artwork, I know that those people care because we're those type of people. The people listening to this show are those type of people, you know, the people that they get underpaid but still put in 60 hours a week and it's
because
it's still
because
to
their name's
work.
On it. They want to give the best product possible. Yeah,
I have no doubt that the person in the trenches cares. I'm just saying that I don't think the large organization cares, and I'm afraid it's going to bite some people in the butt. From Disney's standpoint, you know, there are some benefits. They're going to have a price point they don't want to exceed. They're going to say, if we're going to put something on our shelf, we don't want it to be more than $20 or $30, whatever that number is. And so you could say, for the end user standpoint, you can actually get a game that's considered relatively affordable, especially in the realm of the board game world, knowing what these board games typically cost.
Right.
Because we see a lot of these. So that is a positive. The other thing is,
they're in the game of accessibility when it comes to pricing.
The average person that plays the game, let's be real, I don't think the average family is having a game night one night a week or two nights a week. They're going to play this game once, and they're not going to touch it for 6 months. So having super high-quality cards maybe doesn't matter because they're not going to keep going back to it over and over again. I mean, we all grew up in families where you had, you know, Monopoly and Sorry and Scrabble and these games.
Uno.
And how often did you ever actually as a family pull them down and play them? You played them once, and they went up in a closet. And maybe 6 months later, you pulled them down one more time. There
and
are
the power went out.
I was like, I feel like you had it. Like, there are certain games that you play a lot, but there are definitely some like you're describing. Yeah.
So maybe from their standpoint, you know, okay, the average, they'll have data on this. The average family plays a game X amount of times. So we just need to make something that's going to hold up to that level of abuse. And so I can totally take a step back and see all the logic going into it. However, we talk about a company like Mondo. We know that we have this game that's just come out that's also a Disney game. Well, it's a Mondo game with a Disney IP, but it seems like it's being put out by Disney because it's already on Target shelves.
You said that, but I don't see it on Target shelves. I haven't seen that. Because I'm pretty sure Mondo got the exclusive release, and it just released like 2 days ago.
The reviews I was reading, the guy I was reading, he went and bought it at Target.
Okay, yeah, I didn't see that. And I even went to Target and searched it and couldn't find it. So
interesting.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. So there might be a discrepancy there. But my point is to say, some of the complaints I saw in the reviews, this isn't about gameplay. We haven't played it yet. I am a little bummed about how light the game looks, but whatever. But specifically, reviews called out quality of some of the card quality, the book quality, how the quality of the paper, how small some of the stuff is, how it's light on details. And my point is to say, I know that Mondo's going to put out great artwork. That's not a question. But in the past, we also expect Mondo puts out great quality all the way around.
Yeah.
We expect the print that we get is the separations are going to be good, and all the lining up is going to be good.
Yeah.
And it's high quality paper, and there's not going to be weird bleed issues, and they're going to package it well, and it's going to show up how it should. And same thing, you know, we've talked to Brock on the toy side, the collectible side, all the steps that go into them producing something and all the quality control measures
that
they
have. Yeah. Like capital R, right.
He'll throw away 100 versions if that's what it takes to release one right one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I know that stuff is so important to those guys that are there. And I'm just afraid that if Mondo turns around and puts out a game, great, it's Disney IP, but if the quality's not there, then that starts speaking for the entire brand. And I don't know that... I know Disney can afford to do that. I don't know that Mondo can afford to do that.
Yeah, and so as you were saying that, I was thinking back on the video, the review that I saw. The cards look very much the same as these cards. The chipboard, like the characters, there's like six different characters you can choose. Those look to be high-quality chipboard like these. So I'm wondering... Once I get that in hand, I'll be able to have a side-by-side comparison. But I agree. I think it's like they get it 90% of the way there, and then that last final 10% of details is left. And I would be willing to pay an extra $5 for that extra 10% of quality control. As for the cost of this, the game online, if you can find it in stock, it's $39. If you buy the game in the parks, it's $46, I think. I think it's $45.99.
Well, now that's expensive. So. Now there's no excuse.
As you were saying, price, like the price goes up. But I think, like I said, most of the components of this game are very, very well done. Even the box, I'm trying to show you this, it's really hard to see, has a wooden texture to it. Like it has like they use the spot UV stuff, but to give texture so it feels like a wooden crate. So like I said, 90% of the way there. I hope the gameplay is there. It seems like it's going to be, because I love the Jungle Cruise as a ride. And this does feel like the best interpretation of that ride as a board game. And so I'm excited to get under the hood of it.
There's another discussion to get into, not on this episode. I have not been that sold on the games Mondo's been putting out. We've played several of them, and we played Video Vortex. We've played the whatever the dueling one is, Matched. What's it called?
Unmatched.
Unmatched. We've obviously played the game that's sitting behind me with the...
The Thing?
The Thing.
Yeah. I like that game.
The Thing is a great game.
No, I
haven't gotten through
Thing.
One round of it where we're not like screaming at each other at the end. Like, you know, like.
But thinking in terms of Unmatched, in terms of Video Vortex, and now seeing this new Disney shadowy whatever that we'll get to play shortly, I would say that I get less excited every time I see another release is coming out. Like, The Thing was a really great start, and since then, I'm just waning. You know, it's not like one of these other companies. There's other companies that when something comes out, you just know it's going to be great. And unfortunately, at least on the board game side, that's not how I connect.
They're trying different things, you know, and you can't.
Yeah, that's true.
Like it's one of those things where if you're gonna try a bunch of stuff, some stuff's gonna work and some stuff's not. As long as they keep trying, I'm good with that. I don't want them to rest where they're at though, because I do think that they haven't quite found their sweet spot. I think they have had a couple of hits and a couple of misses, I'm hoping that this game, the Jungle Cruise game, is not a Mondo game. I'm hoping this game is a hit and is very, very fun. So,
well, let's just hope that as Mondo continues to expand, because ultimately Mondo's growing.
Yeah.
Mondo's going to continue to grow. We're going to start walking aisles in Walmart and Target and things like that and see Mondo products on the shelf. That's what's going to happen. Or you're going to be at GameStop and there's going to be a whole wall of Mondo stuff or whatever it is. That's the direction it's going. Let's just hope that as they grow, they're still willing to kill their babies. Kill off things that aren't up to their standard and, you know, things that they realize.
You don't mean
working.
Killing their actual children.
They shouldn't
so
kill
that they
actual
can pay
children.
For products.
Mm-mm.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Let's,
I see.
Let's hope that they can. It's kind of a hope against hope. But my hope is that they can still allow themselves to maybe over-engineer some items and still keep the critical thought because as companies tend to move into the data-driven and especially like stakeholder-driven attitude, we start stripping away these items that for us we know objectively aren't necessary, but they also feel really necessary in having a complete experience.
Yeah.
And I just hope that's not the case.
Yeah. Like bottom line driven versus experience driven is what we're talking about here. And so
exactly.
All right. That's a big long take on a game we haven't actually played yet, but check it out. I will let you know. I'll give you a thumbs up next week if it was good or bad. Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have for us today, friend?
Let's talk about the Inktober controversy that's going on. Have you guys really like heard about this at all? Because I'm sure you've heard of Inktober.
I've only seen briefly. Jake Parker's. I saw his post on his Instagram that was kind of like his, hey, everybody, this is going on. We're in litigation. I can't say much. But I don't know what actually is happening.
Okay, so I'll get into... First, I'll explain what Inktober is, just in case you're like Patrick and you haven't heard of it. Because it's definitely more of a like artist type thing. It's on Instagram. Oh, are you joking with me? Oh my God.
I know what Inktober is. We've had Jake Parker on the show.
He just doesn't know what you're.
I said the controversy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. You said you only knew what Inktober was because I mentioned it. And I was like, okay.
No. I only knew what the controversy was because you mentioned it. I know what Inktober is. Sorry.
Okay. I misunderstood. All right. So the story that's going on is that Jake Parker is the person who kind of innovated Inktober, which everybody knows what it is. it's like a drawing challenge that everybody does in October. And it's been around for like 10 years, so it's not new. And the story kind of goes that last year, Jake Parker was already kind of in a controversial position because he decided to copyright Inktober, which he was only able to do really based on like everybody on the internet making it a thing. You know, and then after somebody is like trying to make money off of it, he goes ahead and copyrights it. And so now you're not allowed to use the Inktober like logo like he had, originally encouraged people to do a lot.
I say it used to be like an open source deal.
Exactly. Like he would share the logo, all that stuff, so people could make their own prompt lists and all that kind of stuff. So it was very, very collaborative. And now it is like, nope, please don't do that. You are not allowed to use the logo. If you do, you'll get in trouble with his people if they find you. And like it just kind of sends a mixed message because like the whole purpose of Inktober is a very like community driven and you know, kind of like online sharing thing. So mm-hmm. saying now that you, after 10 years of it being around, that you can't use this thing, this name for it, they're like, you know, that everyone's used to, is kind of shitty. I don't have a better word.
I love
for
that
it.
you were searching for another word to say so that it wouldn't have to get.
I don't have a better word for it. Yeah. I get why he did it. It's not outside of his rights, but I don't think it's awesome. I think the big reason that he did this is because this year he's decided to publish a drawing book that's called Inktober Year Rounder. I think it's something really close to that. I might have missed the title just slightly. Okay. So he published kind of a preview online to get people interested. And another artist who's pretty well known, Alfonso Dunn, who's like a YouTube artist and he does a lot of like ink drawing tutorials. He published a book in 2015 that he is claiming the Inktober book copies. And I misunderstood originally that I thought the concept of Inktober was what they were bitching about. Sorry, I keep cussing. But it was that this like specifically the book that he was writing is copied. And Alfonso Dunn published an almost hour-long video on YouTube detailing why he, like, basically just explaining his case. And I didn't watch all of it. I kind of skipped through it because I just ran out of time before this episode. But just in my, you know, opinion, I'm not a lawyer, whatever. Like, I would say it's pretty damning. Like, it's pretty hard evidence. It's not just that, like, I understand that like all drawing books have a certain amount of curriculum that would be the same. How different can it be? But it's like it follows lessons in the same order. It kind of steals certain layouts. He really details that he had never seen certain concepts in other books. So that's why he put them in his. And then they're not only like in the exact same order that he had them in, but like explained using the same types of illustrations and stuff. Like Jake Parker clearly like did all his own version, but it's hard to say that he maybe wasn't inspired by this. Yeah. I also think it's like nearly impossible to dispute copyright laws like this. But having kind of just looked at this video that he put out, I'd say it's pretty strong evidence that like, who knows?
There was at least inspiration that maybe at least needed to be credited and wasn't credited.
I think that that's fair. Cause like all artists, like, you know, take in inspiration from other things. And there's always a fine line of like, when are you copying and when are you being inspired by? And this definitely rides the line, I would say. And I'll put in links in the show notes so you guys can kind of watch all the evidence yourself and make your own decisions. Cause like, I think Inktober has been a really cool thing for so many years. And like Jake Parker's a great artist and all this stuff. But this is a sticky situation. And the like online reaction has been very bad. Like you said, his book has been put on hold as they're investigating this. And like I have no idea what way it will turn out. I have no idea who has lawyers in this situation, who doesn't. Like the kind of like really sticky details I don't know much about. But kind of the overall controversy was, did he copy this book or not? And just kind of like outside of this, I think like Inktober has grown way outside of just Jake Parker and his following and what that is. So like, if you want to do it, I don't think you should like feel bad about doing a drawing project in October. Like that is not copyrighted and you should have fun with it because it's like an awesome thing and I've done it and like a lot of people have, and it's always been fun. And so it kind of sucks that now it's like tainted.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
One note to make real quick, because I haven't, like I said, I have only heard of this controversy from you. And I'm only ever aware of Inktober when October starts and I see posts popping up in our feed, but otherwise I don't pay attention to it during the year. But we'll make a note that there are teams of people involved with stuff like this when it comes to making a book. Like his publishing house will have a team of researchers and have a, you know, they'll have legal counsel, they'll have all this other stuff. So even if they ultimately find that something egregious did occur, that doesn't necessarily mean that Jake Parker was the root cause of that.
Right.
So for anybody that's like picking sides or feeling one way or another way, whatever, I would just say make sure you're not personally attacking one individual. Understand that there's a lot more than one person at play. And Jake Parker could be innocent and they could find that there's culpability. That is a possibility. At the same time, there could also be malintent. But it's just remember that. This isn't Jake Parker acting alone. It's a group of people that are acting on his behalf along with him. We'll see how it unfolds.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair to say. And like, I am not a lawyer. I am not an expert. This is just, like I said, like it was only my opinion after watching the videos and kind of exploring what people were like both sides had to say about this. And like Alfonso Dunn has a ton of evidence on his side that he collected and put out this long video. So it's like, kind of hard to ignore.
I mean, yeah, from 2015, that there's timestamps to this stuff that would at least allude to, in the very least, and I haven't seen it, but it sounds like it would allude to it in the very least, hey, maybe give credit, you know, to the fact that you looked at my resource as you were developing your resource, at least give credit to it. So based on what I saw on Jake's Instagram post that he did to the public, didn't seem like he was jumping in on the bandwagon of this is a resource I looked at and I, you know, maybe we missed.
He's been quite quiet. Like he hasn't said a lot other than that statement of like, hey, it's being looked at, the book's on hold.
Can't say much.
But that's also because he's going to have a team of people that he's working with. Reality is,
I don't think that that's unreasonable either. Like,
Here's the thing. Because I will say there is a, when it comes to handling this, assuming that, let's say your work's been copied, or you feel like it has, and you're looking for resolution, my suggestion would be to you, don't go just make a public post about it and call someone out. You need to try to contact them directly. And if it's a big enough thing, you need to get a lawyer involved and have a lawyer contact them directly. But these things, if you throw stuff out in the public sphere and make accusations in the public sphere, I just don't think that is a wise thing to do. So
my guess, Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, your gut reaction to that would be to cringe at the fact that Alfonso Dunn made an hour-long YouTube post about it and kind of put that on blast. Your gut reaction would be to cringe at that, right?
Yeah, if you just want to be critical,
I agree.
To do that, to be critical. I have people that I'm openly critical about on the podcast, but I'm not also seeking some type of like restitution.
Amazon, loyal subjects.
PayPal. Like I have people that I don't like, but again, I'm not trying to get something. If you actually want some
resolution.
Type of settlement, resolution. If you actually want something done, don't just start blasting them in public. Contact them directly or have a lawyer contact them directly and then start that process.
Yeah.
That's how you should handle it. Again, unless you just want to bitch and moan, in which case, make it public. That's what I do.
And I don't know if maybe he did reach out and never heard back, to be honest.
Like, and that's possible, too. I have almost zero
information. Well, in the post of Jake Parker, Jake Parker says he didn't. But it's also possible he reached out to the publishing house. And there's, again, you never know where wires are crossed in this stuff, which is the reason accusations, especially public accusations, are so dangerous. Because miscommunication is so terribly possible and likely, misunderstanding is so terribly possible and likely, So it's just, it's better to kind of handle it in private until you have some bearings and then go from there. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm standing. And I still plan on doing some October drawing challenges.
and this is in no way a pro this person, pro that person. Not
no. I'm just trying to say like this is going on.
No,
yeah,
but
I don't want to. Yeah, yeah.
What I want to say is we've had Jake Park on the show. We've talked to him a couple of times. I have been incredibly, incredibly impressed by A, that dude's just drive to make stuff, and B, his drive to educate people. That's the thing that stood out to me. So however the outcome of this is, please don't let that for anybody be a mark on the reality that Jake Parker is an incredibly driven, incredibly hard worker, and he does care about education, and he's devoted several different aspects of his business to educating others, which is just an awesome thing. So
yeah. Lauren, do you remember one of the very first things you ever did with us for the podcast? And you put together the month-long mustache drawing?
Yeah, Movember.
Movember. That was my first. Yeah, you drew your Ron Swanson. Mm-hmm. You drew your Salvador Dali. All of these that you can still pick up over at Not Cool Co's site as pins. You started those in the Movember mustache prompt.
I did, and I love doing like drawing prompts like this, and I will admit I got the idea from doing Inktober, you know, and I don't always like have the time in October because I get into like tend to have a lot of work and Halloween is always crazy, but like it's fun to do these things. It's fun to make drawing challenges for yourself. You can learn a lot, especially drawing for 30 days in a row. Like it's a great thing. And I don't want to sound like I'm like being really negative on one side or the other. Like I just like this is something that I've seen like floating around like on Instagram and Twitter, but didn't really have any info on. So I thought it would be interesting to talk about.
It's absolutely a relevant topic to this podcast too, right? Like regardless of the direction that it goes or where each of us lie on like our feelings on it, it's a relevant topic to this conversation, to our regular conversation anyway. So yeah, I'm excited to see how it, or interested to see how it all
my
plays out.
My comments aren't to you, Lauren. My comments are to preempting the conversation I know we're going to see in Slack. this is me getting the first word.
That's fine. And I will post all the things that I like the articles I read and the evidence that I saw so that it's not like just my opinion and you guys can form your own opinions. Either way, I think the important thing is just like keep being creative and don't let dumb legal stuff bother you.
Yeah. All right, Patrick, you taking us home?
Yeah, my thought is let's do Movember, which is 30 days of Moraka drawings.
What if instead it was just 30 days of drawing different lawns that you are
manicured yards. Do another Movember.
I legitimately had an idea that like the next year I would do like all goatees and then the year after that all beards because it's like longer and longer.
And then
but I have never had time to do it.
Could you come up with 30 pubic hair prompts? Like, has there been 30?
I'm not drawing that.
Michael Jackson.
Are you picking people whose pubic hair you have to draw? Like, what's the
The idea is people whose pubic hair has been in the public space.
Like that you would identify? Well, now you have Chris Evans.
Yeah. Chris Evans?
What?
His dick pic leaked, and now like every mom on Twitter is like trying to protect him, which I'm like, y'all looked first. Don't pretend.
What? How did I miss that? I have a Google alert for this kind of thing.
What's the movie Bronson? Who's the lead guy in Bronson?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy is full frontal in Bronson. That's what I'm saying. We could do.
I wouldn't recognize any of them. Without
yeah okay content. Yeah I'm sure you wouldn't recognize any of them.
Well, then instead what you do is you just have a pubic hair template and you have to imagine what someone's pubic hair would look like based on their character, their features.
Is it like one of those old school like novelty drawing things where it has the guy's face and you
like
use
the magnet,
magnet shavings?
Yes. Exact same thing.
Wooly Willy, that's what they're called. And it's Wooly Willy. And we don't even have to change the name.
That is true.
We do not even have to change the name. Gosh. All right.
Okay, this is quick. So here's the deal. We're stuck at home. It's, you know, the world is what it is. That's fine. But spending time at home means I'm spending a lot of time at a desk because I can't afford a water cooler. So the thought is, what are those most have items that you need for your desk? And let me just say that this conversation needs to go beyond here. So I need people in Slack to speak up, but I don't.
We're just starting the conversation.
We're starting the conversation. And I know you have things like a computer monitor. I get that everybody has that, but I'm talking about the items that other people
the peripherals
might find insignificant.
Yeah. The peripherals.
But you can't do desk life without. So I'm putting it up to you both first, Andrew and Lauren. What is an item that you have to have when you're at your desk?
Can I have three?
You can have three.
Okay. Lauren, do you have yours?
Yeah. I think I've got three. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want
to
go first?
So the first one that I would say is I have to have a pencil holder. And like by a pencil holder, I don't just mean like a tin cup or whatever. Like it has to be something like my pencil holder that I have currently. It's always been different things. Like I throw pottery. I don't know if you knew that, but like I make pottery.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I have several of my pieces back on the shelf back there. Maybe I'll show you someday. Maybe I'll as if like I'm gonna hold it over here. If you want
you
to see it, I will show you if you'd like to see it. But I am a potter. I haven't done it in a long time, but I am a potter and by practice. But right, so I've usually used my own stuff for like the majority of my life. In recent years, I stopped drawing for like several years, and I've talked about this on the show where I had stopped drawing for a long time. Well, I'm drawing again, so I always have to have at least three, if not five or six or seven, sharpened pencils at my disposal. Mm. So right now I'm using the Mondo Tiki's Raptor, the baby raptor coming out of the, like cracking out of the shell. And so a good creative pencil holder is an absolute essential for me. What's this called? Coaster. A coaster. I know this is like so simple, right?
Yeah.
A coaster has regularly been like my best friend and my go-to. I have two coasters because I usually end up having two drinks, especially when I'm podcasting. I'll have some sort of glass or bottle of water, and then I'll also have some other glass with something else. Like in this particular case, this was Crystal Light Fruit Punch and a glass of water here directly in front of me. So I have two, two of them, and my go-to coaster right now are the classic Disney characters. So this one is my Donald Duck one. I have Mickey, Minnie, Pluto, Goofy as well. So a coaster to keep any sort of condensation off of the desk itself, because desk rings are the worst thing. Like I could just like, it just, I hate it. I hate it so much. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine that I would hate that just knowing my personality.
Of course you would. Yeah.
The final thing is a new thing to me, and I've had it for about the last year. I just upgraded it about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But I had a neoprene mat that was about the size, like just a slightly bigger than my keyboard and mouse. Like it was kind of like a large mouse, a mouse pad essentially.
Yeah.
But I just recently, a couple of weeks ago, upgraded my neoprene mat. It now goes across 80% of my desk. It takes up, like I have my trackpad on it, my keyboard, my mouse, my drinks, my pins. Like there's a whole big long thing. Mm-hmm. And so now when I draw, I have plenty of room to not worry about like getting on my actual desktop or whatever. And it's soft because I spend a lot of time at my desk. I can lean on my desk and I'm not leaning on like on wood or, you know, like some sort of hard surface. It has that bit of a soft, pliable feel to it. And it keeps my desk protected. And so a neoprene mat has become a lifesaver for me.
Lauren, what are yours?
Yeah. I actually have one that's like really similar to your neoprene mat, but I have like a smaller thing because I actually don't use a mouse. I use a trackpad on my laptop most of the time. But I have literally like elbow pads on my desk, which I didn't know these existed. They're literally like grandpa elbow pads, but I have extremely like bony elbows. And like I was literally getting like bruises on my elbows when I was working a lot. And so like I bought these like a week ago and they are the best thing ever. It's like so comfortable to sit at my desk now. I
really
love them.
So it's a new addition.
Yeah, I absolutely love having these. I have like a set of two that are kind of small. They're probably like maybe like 8 or 9 inches by 5 or 6 inches.
And are they brown?
Yeah, because my desk is brown, so it matches.
Okay, I was going to say, they look like they came directly off of your grandpa's or your college professor's tweed jacket. That's what they look like.
They totally do, yeah. but my desk is a really similar color, so they're like less obnoxious this way. Yeah. But it is a silly thing, but it helps me a lot because I work. I've been working a ton in the last few weeks. So like I was, like I said, literally had bruises on my elbows. So this is a really big improvement for me. This is another one that probably everybody has, but I can't live without it because I have like so many things in my office that I'm always connecting to, like my microphone, my printer, my sticker cutter is just like the USB dongle that transforms your new Mac output to USB. It's like
is it a dongle or is it like a slide on? Because I have one that is like a hub that slides onto it.
I want to get one like yours, but I still have just the dongle. But okay, anything right. like that, yeah. I feel like now is totally essential because you don't have a USB on your Mac laptop. So, and all my electronic devices are USB, my tablet, my everything. So, that thing I get used every day. Like I literally misplaced it, before our last recording and I was like, Trevor, where did you put it? And it was like just in a drawer.
And then you yelled at him and he yelled at you and it became a 45-minute like argument and now he's sleeping at someone else's house.
He keeps leaving his at his office because he needs one. And so he keeps borrowing mine, which is why I thought he had it.
Yeah. What a dongle doofus. That's what we call him in the biz.
Yeah, exactly. Last thing is, and this is probably only for people who run an online shop, but I put off buying one of these for so long and it has been the best purchase I ever made and they're not even that expensive. So I just don't think there's any excuse not to buy one earlier. A label printer, which is like what you see at the post office. It basically prints off like on stickers that I don't have to cut anything out anymore. There's no transferring, no nothing. It is literally just like printing the labels just like you would get at the post office, putting them on your packages. And I love that thing. The brand that I have is a Dymo brand, and the like edition I have or whatever is the Label Writer 4XL. That I use all the time. It has made my life so much easier. So I just like really wish I'd bought one sooner is all I have to say about those.
Are you wanting us to put links to these things onto the show notes, Patrick?
Who knows?
This one I'm totally happy to because it's so specific. Yeah. For sure.
Like the things that you can purchase, I mean. Like, yeah. Obviously, I don't need to put like my coaster set.
Yeah, yeah, or the dongle. Like, yeah. I'm totally
a neoprene mat or whatever, like that dongle thing. Yeah.
Yeah. A label printer is just amazing. And then I'll throw in one.
How much did you say it was?
They're like between $150 to like $250. And like, I got a really nice one because I asked for it for Christmas. So like, I got to like spend more on it, but like you can get cheaper ones and it literally just makes everything easier. I wish I'd bought one sooner.
Yeah. They end up paying for themselves after a couple of purchases.
I can't explain how much time it saves. Like it really just saves so much time. So yeah, I think it's more than worth the price. And like I've had zero issues with mine the whole time that I've had it for like over a year and a half now. So love that thing. And then I'd just say working from home, get a good pair of noise canceling headphones, especially if you have a significant other who lives with you because like Trevor's in meetings all the time. And like, I just like,
I
need to be
dongle.
Really quiet. Yeah. And I need to be really quiet. And like, or sometimes he talks really loud. So I just need to like be in my own space, but we can't get out of the house. So that has been essential in quarantine.
So for me, and you've just reminded me that I have to buy new noise canceling headphones. My Bluetooth has messed up where now I can't turn Bluetooth off. I've had to let the battery die finally. So it's trying to connect to my devices 24/7. I have the Bose, whatever the nice ones. What are the nice ones? Like the 30s or something?
I don't know.
The QC30s, I think, is what they are. Anyway, now the good thing is, I'll throw this out there. These are out of warranty. I've had these for a few years. Warranty's gone. But because I bought the Bose product, because I registered them, these normally cost $330 or $350. If I send these back along with $200, they'll send me a new pair of the latest version, which is actually
awesome.
Newer than these are because these are the Series 1 and now they're on the Series 2. So at least I don't have to pay like full another $350. But anyway, you've reminded
That's
me.
Cool.
I have to have paper and pen. And which is funny because I'm a developer. I'm not, y'all actually draw stuff, you know, and things like that. But I take all my notes in a book and then I transfer them to whatever program I'm using to keep track of my tasks. But I just like the tactile feel of writing something. So I always have a Barefic Confidant. And I currently have a Squire hanging out as well. But I always have to be able to write stuff down. The second thing is some type of speaker that is not my computer speakers. I like to have music going, but I just do not want to hear music from a computer speaker. I've got a Sonos Play 1 that I keep sitting on my desk, and I run that. And again, it just I would rather not listen to music than listen to music on computer speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And then outside of that, I also like a dongle is very important, but I will name something else. There is a big difference in having an actual webcam versus using your computer webcam. So I'm running Logitech C922. You can find those as low as like $80, $75, something like that. They also have some that are like $110. I think they have one now that's like a step above this one, but not a huge price, and it makes a huge difference in call quality. So for me, I'm on a call with clients, I mean, typically every day of the week, and a lot of times multiple times per day, and it's just an absolute huge difference to have a webcam. An external webcam versus relying on your laptop. And it also allows me to move my laptop around, get in a comfortable position, and not have to worry about also framing me at the same time because I have a separate opportunity to frame myself. If you do already have a webcam, just make sure you're lit well. And if you aren't lit well, there are some great options for personal light. So that would be the next thing you'd want to look for, is potentially even like a personal light. But get a webcam, start there. But those are the things that I need. But we will post them this. I'd like to hear what y'all need. I mean, I'm guessing like none of us mentioned like any type of cable wraps or clips. None of us talked about any type of elevated stands. Like, I know people make full organizational products.
And I have all those things. But if you had to like nail it down, like, yeah, let's have other people talk about those things, because that's
exactly. But none of us talked about like charging mats. None of us talked like, there's all these things out there, and I know some people are sitting on some items that are like, listen, you wouldn't even believe how much this would change your workflow.
Oh, yeah.
We want to hear what those are. So just jump into Slack, gameofone.network, and click the Slack icon, join us. And then also you can, of course, comment on social media, but would love to hear the things that you're using.
Yeah, I think on that note, let's just keep that thread going. You can find us at M of One Podcast on all the different platforms. Join us in Slack, like Patrick said. You can support the show by liking, rating, reviewing on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and Spotify and all the different places. And then you can also support the show on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/M of One Podcast to do $2, $4, or $6 a month. Every little bit helps. Buy a pin. We have those artist series pins that we did with Colin that are incredible. We still have a few of those left, so go and purchase one of those. We have some new Pondering Potter merch that's available over at Not Cool Co. With the lovely little owl. They're really cool little keychains. And then I think the stickers will probably be available at some point as well, right?
Yeah, the keychains will come with the Hedwig sticker, but I'm going to put them all on there, I think, after all of our trivia contests
are over. Once the series
is
done? Yeah. Great. So with that all said, listen to the Pondering Potter if you want a chance to win some sticker packs. There is some trivia every week. I think that's all the different things that you can do. Oh, Maker's Dozen. Go check out our Maker's Dozen. We have 5 new people every single week. They're quick little reads, but they're super, super fun. But I think for now, we're going to get out of this episode. I'm Andrew.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Patrick.
Peace out.
Adios.
Bye.